The young man said the bombers, Russian-supplied Antonovs, targeted schools and villages indiscriminately. When they saw buildings, they bombed them, he told the NGO Save the Children. His account and others are included in the latest version of the UNESCO publication Education for All Global Monitoring Report. The yearly publication is part of a global campaign to provide universal primary education within the next 3 years. It documents the plight of children from conflict-ridden nations, states that have made the least progress in meeting the Millennium Development Goals. They mandate universal primary education and gender equity in schooling by 2015. Pauline Rose is the director of the Education for All Global Monitoring Report.
In the 35 conflict-affected countries, we find 28 million children out of school. That's a significant proportion of the total out-of-school numbers, about 42% of the total number out of school. Now, the reasons for this are obviously varied across different countries. In some countries, it's just that schools aren't even accessible in conflict zones. The teachers aren't there. The schools are sometimes even attacked, meaning that children are obviously don't feel safe to go to school. In places like Afghanistan, I mean, this is a reasonably common occurrence with, in that case, the schools directly attacked for reasons, part of the conflict itself. In other places, it's to do with the fact that it's insecure to walk to school, you don't feel safe going to the school gates and so on. For young girls, it can also be fear of their sexual safety, sexual harassment on the way to school. In conflict-affected countries, rape and sexual violence for young girls is not uncommon, unfortunately.
In some conflicts, all sides adhere to Geneva Conventions, prohibiting strikes on public places, including schools and hospitals. But UNESCO says educational infrastructure is the focus of many combatants today. In some cases, militants target schools as symbols of government authority, or because they are occupied by troops or security forces, as they are in Yemen and Somalia. In other cases, schools have been targeted for religious or ideological reasons.
So in Afghanistan, given that the idea of girls going to school has been part of the concern of some militant groups, that has been a cause for their direct attack on girls' schools. In other parts of the world, it might be more that the schools are caught in the crossfire but are still vulnerable to attack even so. As you say, also in some places, the schools themselves can be used for as bases for because they are an institution that is there that militants can use to house themselves and to use as a base.
Not only does conflict destroy educational facilities, but it also puts both boys and girls at risk of sexual violence. In recent years, the UN has documented evidence of rape against children by armed groups and even the national armies in Chad, Darfur, Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Victims often become social outcasts, making it unlikely they'll keep going to school. The UN says there's near impunity for perpetrators, and school children are also at risk of being recruited as combatants. In some countries, including Sudan, both state and non-state parties have abducted children from refugee camps and displacement centers. Conflict also destroys local educational infrastructure and may uproot entire communities whose residents become internally displaced people, or IDPs, or refugees. The UN says there are more than 19 million of them worldwide, and about half are young children under the age of 18. Of the displaced, only refugees have the right to education, guaranteed under international law, but it's not always enforced, and access to education is uneven. Schools and refugee camps often suffer from a lack of full funding for teachers, equipment, and textbooks. Last year, Pauline Rose visited the Dadaab camps in northern Kenya, which shelter more than 250,000 refugees from Somalia. Young people make up about a quarter of the camp's inhabitants.
So you have half of children without any access to school. You have sort of classes of over 300 children. And, I mean, just the conditions getting worse and worse. But these camps have been there for 20 years, so it's not a sort of short-term situation. In Durban, when I was there, one of the things that I kept hearing from the young men was that because they both didn't have any access to education, they couldn't go to secondary school, most of them hadn't been able to complete primary school, plus there was no work for them, that they had seen many of their friends return to Somalia and take up arms. So that's been a sort of a key issue within the Durban refugee camps. And obviously also the idleness of the youth means that there is also a lot of insecurity within the camps themselves as well.
UNESCO notes that increased funding for education remains a contentious political issue for nearly two dozen conflict states where military spending exceeds funding for social programs. Half of those nations are in sub-Saharan Africa. The Education for All Global Monitoring Report says the military budget is twice as large as the primary school budget in Ethiopia. In Chad, it's four times as large, and in Pakistan, seven times greater. The study estimates if the conflict states in sub-Saharan Africa could cut military spending by 10%, they could educate more than a quarter of their out-of-school population, or nearly 3 million people. It says one-fifth of Pakistan's military budget would provide for universal primary education. One country has succeeded in increasing funding for education to great effect. For decades, Botswana has channeled its wealth from diamond exports to fund universal primary education and to create a skills base for its thriving economy. But experts say so far, Botswana is an exception among countries with lucrative petroleum and mineral resources. I'm William Eagle in Washington.